problem.
I was just trying to check something. It's 6:40, and I haven't got used to it yet. And I find I have it on sometimes, but it doesn't record.
I had a very embarrassing situation like that.
You have to live with them. Now this Western writer you're talking about.
He creates situations that are so real, and he's done it through research. He's gone through old bookstores and bought old diaries and things like that, and he's just immersed himself in it. But he said when he tries to write about the present, he gets all cluttered up. He can't seem to focus. But he can do it by going back into history.
Isn't that nice? Yeah.
I'll try to write about the present. Maybe that's my problem.
I tell you what I've had a chance to do. And you'd think I should have made something of it, more of it. I've had a chance to live with some of these things. Henry James has those two little pieces that are put in that little paper bag. What's the one? It's the turn of the screw. An idea? Turn the screw. And the other one is something about Daisy. What's it called? Well, anyhow, both of them are short. You might call them novelettes. And they are absolutely beautiful and gifted beyond speech. But no one ever thinks that. You just have to live with them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to. And I've had a chance to live with Melville. You see,
See, you read differently than I do because you read them and reread them and reread them.
I don't reread them so much. I use them.
Mm-hmm. In your teaching.
No.
No.
I use them in my thinking. I use them out here.
Well, you use them like I use a book called Agri, I guess, and I should do what you do, really, because I'm dealing with technique without using good examples.
Yeah.
Lagus, I think it's pronounced Lagus Agri, wrote a book on writing, playwriting primarily, conflict. I learned an awful lot from that book. It's a marvelous book. But I use that, and I don't really take the samples that you've given and try and use the samples. And probably I should do.
Yeah. Well, I've used Emerson. Just three or four of the essays. I've never read much of Emerson. But those half dozen of his essays, you see, I've worked with them. And it's kind of like what was that? What do they say about the? Well, I forget what they say. Well, anyhow, I don't know them as a scholar.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole lot I ought to like to know about them in a scholarly way that I don't know them. And I've got to the point now where I don't care now whether I know or not. Well, I'd like to, but I won't pay the price to dig it up. I know a good bit. Now, you see, I've also lived with Poe. Again, just a half dozen of his short stories and poems. And Franklin's autobiography. You see, that don't mean the same thing to me that it does to anybody else. I've used it in so many ways. Well, now, none of those things are hard to read. None of them. I didn't mention Whitman. Whitman's sometimes a little hard, but it's because you just don't have a toehold. It's the only reason it's so hard. And I could, you see, all these people you run across, you can pick up a little from them. I could show you just a little bit like that,
mm-hmm.
and it would help you get hold of your subject more than one of the courses would.
Oh, I don't see. I don't think there's any point in me going back. That's why I didn't consider going back for English. I don't think that would help me.
No, the courses are so mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need a course, you see. You don't need to read 12 novels, a novel a week, you see, for 12 weeks.
You need to read one novel well.
You just need to read one and kind of look at it and
mm-hmm.
keep looking at it. And I'd say work with somebody who's ahead of you a little bit
mm-hmm.
in that particular line. Now, you see, in that way, I'd be a little ahead of you. But in most ways, you see, you'd be way ahead of me.
Well, how can I help you? I can think of a million ways you could help me.
No, they're limited. They're limited. What I could do, I could just work along. I think that the marvelous thing would be to have three or four people you see who are kind of going in the same direction, and you sort of tap all of them, and it gives you an audience too.
I've often thought, back in the 20s, in New York. There were a whole group of writers.
Yes, right. That's right.
And I've read about that time, and it's
yeah.
I don't envy very many things, but oh, I envy
yeah.
that they would sit around and talk to each
Crystal
other.
Marlowe.
Oh, there was a whole host of them. They used to meet once a week.
Yeah.
And there were wits, and there were
yeah.
serious writers.
Yeah.
All different kinds.
Yeah.
Benchley was part of that group.
Yes.
And Gertrude Stein, I think.
I don't know about that. But Benchley, yeah.
But these people had interplay.
And one of the women, who were they?
Parker.
Dorothy Parker.
It wasn't
yeah.
Gertrude Stein. It was Dorothy
yeah,
Parker.
Dorothy Parker.
And
now you're getting into something. Well, now that's a little bit. The New Yorker still has a touch of that, but not a big touch.
Well, but the communication between the people. This is like my son has read. He's very deeply in love with a certain. He knows better than I do. He's been reading French writers
yeah.
and American writers who wrote in France during the 20s.
Yeah.
And again, that was that colony, that Left Bank colony,
yeah.
where the artists and the philosophers and the writers all worked together and
yeah.
fed each other.
Yeah.
Now, we're looking at it over the perspective of years. Maybe
yeah.
it wasn't all as great
oh,
as
yeah.
it looks now. You're right. That's the kind of thing I would hope to if I could come
yeah.
to a Gainesville,
yeah.
which I know I won't get. But
you can't get it unless you know to get it.
But
you
that's,
see,
that's
you,
the
if,
kind
if
of
if you've
thing.
Seen it in the 20s, then you've got a little fighting chance.
I'd often joke that I said, what I'd like to do is have a salon. They don't have salons anymore. Or if they do now, they're pseudo situations for effects more than really people sitting down and talking. I'd love to be around people. They don't have to be in the same field. They don't have to be writers. But people who have what you talk about. The spark.
Yes.
But that still hasn't answered how I can work with you.
I tell you what, you see, I don't define things like you do, and my mind's not logical like yours is, like you've had to be and are.
I'm trying to shake it a little bit so I can become a better writer.
No, you see, what I've come up with, you see, like I said to you, I told Faye, I said, well, hell, Faye, we don't have to sit around and talk. we can make a trip down John Palmer's and take a camera with us and a tape recorder and get down a little talk just to be, you know, have something to rely on and make a couple of photographs, photos, and And you write up one, I write up one, and we look at them together and see what we come out. And don't discuss. Discussion, I don't discuss. This is the most discussing I do. I don't discuss with Wade. I don't discuss, really, with anybody anymore.
You only have to discuss to set the rules with which you're going to work.
Mm-hmm.
But once the rules are established, and rules is a harsh word, but you know what I mean, the framework is established,
yeah,
then you don't need discussion anymore, because the work takes its place.
But now, your scripts have me buffaloed. They're clear out of my reach, and I don't see how they are applicable.
No, they're not to what you're doing, but what you're doing is applicable to the script.
Yes, I can see
it
that.
It works the other way around.
Sure.
What you're doing...
Well, put it this way. I don't see, if you're working on a script, I don't see how anybody is going to go along with you.
No.
I'm saying, now you understand, I don't know. I'm just making a statement. I do like I said. I get a camera and a tape recorder and go down to Johnny Palmer's and take a picture of that fence that Mr. Eastman built. And
a great fence.
Yeah. And see how it come out. Well, you'd see something entirely different from what I see. Because
mm-hmm.
you see your...
My background is different.
Yes, and you don't know them the same way I do. So, you see, but you'd have something to work on. It's part of the terms in which you think. Of course, you have to work it out. But...
Well, this is just the reason I showed you. It's simply because you want to know what I've done, so you can know me a little.
I wish you had a copy of some of those things, and I could read some of them.
I can leave some here for you if you'd like.
I wouldn't want you to do that with just your only copy.
That's true. That's all I have. I can make some copies for you.
I'll run off some for me. You know you can send manuscripts in the mail for 18 cents a pound.
Oh, I know very well.
Fourth class manuscript.
That's the only way I can take all the rejections I get. I can afford them.
Yeah. I didn't know that for a reason.
Do you think that I could do something at the university and still work with you?
Oh, yes. Sure.
Because
it might be safer that way, because it would give you a little chance to kind of get your footwork.
Well, that too, but...
This new place here, you see, it's show you, and having a regular hours would keep you in line.
Oh, I don't need that kind of... I've got plenty of discipline the other way, but what
well,
I really need...
For this place here, it takes...
I'm pretty good at that. But what I do have to do is I have to put myself peace of mind financially. And if I can do that, then creatively, I can let myself loose in a lot of ways. If I'm worried financially, I know me.
Well,
then I've got to...
I'll tell you this. Waiting for the day. Last 3 or 4 years I worked up there, they gave me half time. I just taught a class sometimes, one class, sometimes two. And the rest of the time I worked out here. Now, that's unusual. But I mean,
well, the first
good.
Thing I asked Dean Jones when I worked for the state of Florida before, and after my job was terminated because the legislature didn't okay the program. They had asked me if I wanted to come work for the News Bureau. I didn't do it because they told me that anything I wrote had to be approved by them. And the first thing I asked Dean Jones is that, is there any restriction on work I do on my own? And he said, no. And that's important to me. I don't want to have everything that I submit for publication going through somebody else. So, but that would give me, particularly with her, I'd know that I'd have be able to pay my rent, and I'd be able to have my groceries on the table. And then I could, instead of, I'm a terrible worrywart, so instead of wasting all that energy worrying, which I know is not logical and not good, but it's me, I will do that. If I have, this is what I think also made me so very tense in Winter Haven. It has been disastrous just trying to keep the rent paid every month. And
how much did you pay that?
Much too much. 2.25.
You can't get anything in it back, much less than that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all kinds of... How much do you have to have to get by?
I don't really know. I don't need a heck of a lot because it's just the two of us now. I need to cover my rent. And I need to cover my groceries. And if I can...
Car going.
Yeah, hopefully not too much.
You don't have to buy clothes. That's what I always say always does. She wore her college clothes for 20 years.
Well, I don't bother much with clothes. I own a mink coat. It was given to me by someone. And I have one gown. So that's all the fancy clothes I need. I don't wear things out very much. My feet haven't grown since I was 14.
Let me tell you, we could keep you going. That is, just keep you going, you wouldn't get rich. But, you know, there's some advantage of working. It would look good on your record, too.
Well,
Working with the journalism people.
I think it would be good for me.
And then being associated with them for a short time. I wouldn't think very long.
I think it would be good, and I think it would do what I need. Well, for example, in my mind works this way because this is my background. When you started telling me about what you're doing, all I could think of was, gee, that would make a marvelous hour television special for NET.
Mm-hmm. It would.
And I would love to put together something like that.
Yes.
It would have to be...
But you know why they don't do it? Because nobody really can.
Well, this is what I got, the feeling I got from Dr. Christensen. I asked him point blank, I said, if I have a project that I think is good, would I be permitted to do it? And he said, by all means. He said, we'd even help you try and get the grant money to do it.
Marianne Green is a right gifted girl, lady. Her husband is a member of the Drummond Pub. And she has a weekly program on the education television. And I know her very well. And... she does nice things. Most of them are community spirited.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, if you get over to me, you leave a community spirit. And it's
well,
to be a little farther along than she is.
The kind of things I'd like to do, you see, there is no reason, there is no logical reason why Gainesville cannot turn out the same quality type material that Boston turns out. True, Boston's a big city to draw from. You can't have the Boston Pops Orchestra, but you can have dramatic, you can have, and what I think, I'm very fond of this state. It's my adopted home. But there are things in this state that people think of people think of Florida outside of this state as Miami Beach, maybe St. Petersburg, Disney World now. But from the middle to the northern end of the state is a wealth of history and interest and interesting people. I don't think you could ever run out of material. I've wanted to do a special, either for film or in a book, on Dr. Gorey in Apalachicola, the man that discovered the first air conditioning. Nobody has touched any of these things. All I've seen on it is a very academic type book that somebody wrote that's probably historically accurate but very dull. I'd like to bring some of these things to life.
When I see it on something like that, I'd have worked with you on it, I'd never be able to do it myself. And that depends on the category. I sent this manuscript to the publisher and talked with Willie Nealon. And that February the 10th is Bustry Day. Now, Louis Nealon is retired. He retired the year I came down here. He was 70 in 1957. And he was one of my main people for a few years. And those first years I was down here, that really determined me. I saw people I'd never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know they existed. And he had that one talk. They talked with Lord Nealon. Now, some of them on tape, some of them not.
Mm-hmm.
Rick went over with him to his forest. He's got 2 or 3 acres of hardwoods over there. His retirement project, he calls it. And he just went over there with him and talked. Mr. Nealon talked. He came back and sat down. He worked on it 2 or 3 days. And then Mr. Nealon checked it, but he didn't check much. There wasn't much to check. And what he was interested in was getting a feel for trees.
Mm-hmm.
And but in my part of it, I took it, Mr. Nealon. What came out that he'd been out here any number of times. He'd stay and talk. Sometimes we'd tape it. Sometimes we'd just talk, forget to tape it. But this time, I had 3 or 4 of the young people with me, and the audience was good. Mr. Nealon had run off on that blustery morning. He'd run off in a ditch, and he came up, and we said, good morning, and he said, what's good about it? And he really meant it. It upset him that he ran off the ditch. It's just a very little ditch. There's several things. We got him going. We kept him out of his stereotypes. He's been
mm-hmm.
a public servant so long. He's got so many stereotypes, things he don't normally tell. And then he gets in the habit of telling them, and that's bad. Well, he got into the West when he was a boy in the Sierras logging. And here came this horse train up there. They had 16 and 18 horses to one wagon. So they had to go clear out almost past over the rim, you see, to get around the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And then he met a wagon on that curve. And he relived that. Now, he relived it. I don't mean he told about it. It is a vast difference.
We used to do a thing when I was back in school called sensory recall in drama. And of course we would set the stage for it and create the situation, and the object was for the student to take something that was vivid in their imagination and to concentrate on it so deeply that they were re-experiencing it as they went through it. But people do that, particularly this man had just had something happen to him and his adrenaline was really flowing, and that's exciting.
Well, now, what I was going to say is, it's your category. It's you've got your, now the young fellow who's the editor wrote me a note about it and said. said he didn't think it would go over like that. He thought the straightforward presentation would be better. Now you see, and that meant that he hadn't got into that at all. Because, you see, Mr. Kneeler won't hold up with a straightforward presentation. He'd sound like 1,600 other people.
That's right.
And
that was
here.
That was one editor.
Yeah, but I think it was Kim Tennessee.
I think part of the problem, and I'm no expert on this, but part of the problem in creating the kind of thing that you're working with is in directing it to a market and finding the proper market for it and in preparing the market so it's ready to receive it. It's kind of a packaging job.
Yeah.
And that's something I'd like to help you with.
Well, I need help.
I'd like to sit down and work in that area.
Yes, I need. Now, that might be a pedestrian sort of thing, but I sure need it.
Well, it's like I said, to me there is no great satisfaction in creating if what I create is not, if I can't share it with people.
Right.
I'm not one of these people who writes for themselves. And maybe that's why I've tried to explain this to my son. He's still very young, and as far as he's concerned, he writes for himself. But when he gets rejection slips, you see him mope for a month and a half afterwards. I think he's going to come up and visit me, and I've told him about you, and he's most anxious to meet you. But I don't feel that way, and if I have to... Sure, I'm sensitive. When people criticize me, it hurts me as much as it hurts him. That's what he doesn't realize. But it's a matter of priorities. My priority is, well, if I can make it better so people, more people will get to read it, that's what's important. I mean, I won't do it if I feel it's destroying the piece. I'd rather just forget it. But I realize there's an awful lot I don't know, and I'm not every person, so I can't judge always what an audience wants. And that's what I try and learn. Well, I think my next basic step really is dig up a place to live here and hope that that job comes through with the station, either that or the, I guess it's assistantship or with the part-time teaching, one or the other.
Assistantship, they specify for an assistantship that you have to take 3 courses.
Well, no, this is not... What he told me is the assistantships are all taken. This is a part-time teaching position.
Yeah, I see.
And,
So you wouldn't have to take courses, you
don't want to. No. In fact, the part-time teaching position pays better than the assistantships.
Yes, they don't
teach. And I think there are evening courses, if I'm correct. I'm not sure. Oh, no, I know what he said. He said he had a couple people out of desperation the first semester, and the only time they were available was at night, so the course had to be scheduled at night. So I guess they can be any time. He just had them scheduled because these people had full-time jobs in town and were coming and so on.
John Paul Jones has done some interesting things.
He's a delightful man.
He's a delightful person.
Really?
But I don't think there's anything you can learn from him.
No, because he's not a writer. He has never written any fiction except something he's working on right now. He's got a series of books called The Florida Boys.
But he's really good at what he has done.
But his article writing is excellent.
Just marvelous, isn't it?
And he is a good teacher of article writing because I've sat in several of his
classes. The newspaper shows it.
He's very good at that. But we just had a delightful conversation. He was telling me about this book that he started when his children were young. And then somehow or other, he never got around to finishing it. You see, he was a newspaper man right out of high school during the Depression. And then he finally saved up enough money to come to college. And he could only finish 2 years because that's all he had money for. And then he left again. Then he came back again. So he got started pretty late in life as far as teaching is concerned. And... it took up a lot of his time, but now he has grandchildren, and so he's doing the books for them now.
Oh, is that it?
And
oh,
he's
I
got
see.
One finished and one halfway done, and he's got 15 outlined. And it would be like the Hardy Boys series or this type of thing, only it's the Florida Boys, and it's based on his childhood in Florida, growing up hunting in the Suwannee River and this type of thing. So it should be delightful. I don't know how good a fiction writer he is, but the concept, I think, is a good, valid concept.
I imagine anything he does would be rather interesting.
So we talked about it an hour and a half. I thought I was embarrassed because I didn't want to take up that much of his time. But we had talked about it, and he had only tried to market it at two places, and both of them were textbook publishers. And, of course, now, and I didn't say it, but I was thinking now, you teach your students better than that. You teach them that you have to market it in the right place, but he already had contacts with these two publishers. So he'd only tried that.
Let me tell you, I think of so many things that are traps. For one thing, if you were here, and you see, you'd say, now, here's the opportunity. And you would go from your scripts over into something else. If you try hard, it'll kill it.
I'm having that trouble right now with that Brazil article. In fact, I put it away today because I suddenly realized that I was too intense with it.
Yeah.
It's not flowing anymore.
Well, you know, it's perfectly obvious to me, just from the little you read about it, that that's not your subject. You don't know enough about it.
No, I think there's a little different problem there. I think the problem is I haven't decided what I want to write.
That's the problem, isn't it?
Too much happened during that trip, and I'm trying to condense it, and I haven't gotten my right point of view.
Yes, let me tell you, I've got some things. You know, it's amazing. I can see how some of the things I do you could use, and some of the, certainly a lot of things you do I blank on. But you don't want to get off onto this. Mark Twain has that. It's not really right to just bring it up in a fragment here. So Mark Twain has that in Huckleberry Finn, where they go on the old wreck and they find all these odd men. They find fishing line without a hook, and one thing after another, and it's fascinating. I've never tried it, but just when I was up in West Virginia about a month ago, I was trying to do something to clear my head, and that afternoon they weren't there, and I went out in the outbuildings. I started in the old John, and I was going to do a little something on it, and then I went, there was three in a row. And the first one was his tools. And I got to looking at them. And I went on down there to my little 12-foot trailer and the typewriter, and I was going to set them down what I'd seen up there. And you know, I wore out my mind or injured it somewhere along the line. And you know, I right there where I was looking in the middle of it, it would go blank on me. I'd have to go back up there and see it. Well, I did that all afternoon. I kept that in my mind. And finally, I got it all written out. And then I let it rest a while, and I just let that go. And I just started looking at it again, thinking I would write it out. And this time, I treat it with a little more freedom. And I had to peep every now and then, but I got through it. And I did that three times. And what I was doing was using the material and get it in shape where I could do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't know I don't know how that would work with real writers.
The next The first night in Brazil, I tried my best. In fact, I have a little tape recorder that I had with me. And the first night was a frightening night, but it was fascinating as well as frightening. I mean,
if
I was,
you could just catch that feeling,
I
be
was scared. But I started doing things like looking at the door to the room. There was a four on it, and it was painted pink. And drawing this vivid picture. And I really thought I had it until later when I started looking at my slides. And I realized I didn't remember it as it was at all.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether I waited too long to do the article or whether I haven't waited long enough.
Let me tell you, I have a very definite opinion on that. I was brought up in this academic world where they polish and polish and polish. I don't believe in polishing anymore. I believe in having experience and coming right into the typewriter and using it.
Well, the reason I didn't write the story then is because I was busy with the script.
Sure.
And I did all that.
Sure.
But there's so much.
Two books at one time. I never do that.
Yeah, but there was so much that had happened that wasn't applicable to the script.
Sure.
Because what happened to me there was a personal experience.
Yeah.
The script wasn't personal.
Yeah.
The script was the story about a project, and I had to write about the project, and none of me is in that script. I wanted to write about the missionaries.
Well, now let me tell you, you must let me have that script that you wrote on assignment and some of your writing on what you saw.
Okay.
I just love to have that.
But.
See that.
My feelings when I walked into the favela, the slum. I mean, I've never known that people could exist, let alone live, continually in circumstances like this, and still be happy. Those are the things I wanted to write about. Now, a lot of it was shown on film, so I didn't really have to carry it emotionally with words.
Yeah.
But I think that's been the most frustrating thing I've ever tried to do, because I had very strong feelings.
Yeah.
And I sat down and I've written that article 20, 30 times already.
Well, you see, something like that, you'd want to go right back to that, just like I went back to the tube shed.
I should have written it while I was there. That's
yeah.
where I made my mistake.
And keep going back and going back and going back and tidying up your own senses.
I don't know whether I'll ever get that darn article finished now. It just may hang in there. But, and then I get caught in the rhetoric. I want so much to polish it, and I keep polishing. And sometimes you hit a point where you polish too much and you lose it.
Yeah, you lose it.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's the traps in it, of course. It's worth it.
But I think I can help you with some of the things that you're doing, and I would like to. There's nothing I would like more.
I tell you, what I would like, most of all, like I said, is to have three or four people. And I'm having to go away from the ones I work with. They don't stay with it long enough. Having to get older ones and people who got the muscle. I'd love to. That's my salvation right now. It'd be just marvelous if you had three or four people you see where you'd have a little audience in case you want someone to come around and talk a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know one of those fine feature stories, and I'd like to get the person who wrote it to come around and talk. But I can't say come around and talk to me about it. Isn't that awful? I'm no audience. You need enough to be an audience. You need three or four people.
Mm-hmm.
You need three or four people to understand what's going on, and then maybe a couple who just think one.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's maybe you don't have that experience, but that's the thing that would help me so much.
Yeah, that's feasible. Of course, finding people.
It's there. It's very easy to find them. It's you got to have something going to kind of pull them in every now and then, or indirectly.
Yeah, we gotta be able to work that out. That shouldn't be too much of a problem.
Why don't you talk to Faye about, she has a house up there that she doesn't use too much. And it's right there, and
okay.
Walking distance to the schools and everything.
That would be great.
That might cut down on how much work you have to do over there.
Okay. I'll do that. I'd like to get up here as soon as possible. I'm going down to Miami Monday. There's a possible job down there. And if the city of Miami doesn't back out, that would give me my money to move out of Winter Haven. And that's what I need right now. Of course, if the other job at the station came through and I knew that I had a salary coming in and I could arrange for the money anyway, so that's no problem. But I'd much rather have it rather than borrow it. I would much rather do that job for the city of Miami and have that money in my hand that's mine that I don't have to pay back anybody to do everything. So.
Yeah.
I know I'm an ornery character, but I like keeping things uncluttered financially. Okay. I'll talk to her, but I would say sometime between now and Thanksgiving. If I could do it, I'd like to do it then. If the job at the educational TV station comes through, it would have to be soon because he's ready now. My little one's a little nervous, but I think she'll adjust pretty well. And if I could get in. They told me at school best time to break it would be either before Christmas vacation or Thanksgiving vacation. So that might be good, because they break their school grading system or something at that time. I think the 20th of November is the end of the grading period.
Yeah, that's not good to understand that.
So that would work out pretty well.
Well, let's go out and see what everybody's doing. This is Sunday after Faye goes to town with her and they stay a good while. This is Sunday.
I don't know where you have time to do all you do anyhow. Eileen?
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
I can see you. Emotional thing. That's you get so much information on those subjects that you get flooded with information.
Mm-hmm.
They just flood you with it, don't they? I mean,
most of the time.
It's not a question of where you get it or how do you manage to get it.
No, the publications that I do for any length of time get a little difficult after a while because there's nothing new to write.
Yeah.
But it's not difficult to get. It's no great research project.
Sure. And it's not heavy with information. It's sort of light with information.
Right.
There's not too much demand for it.
It's propaganda.
Yeah.
In fact, if you get too heavy, they don't like it.
Sure. Well, that's interesting. But even so, the touch has to be light.
Mm-hmm.
And I like on those colors you see of the rugs, the new rugs that they have. You see, you.
Oh, that's a real old one, yeah.
You have to get into that and have a little feel for it, don't you?
Yeah, it's not very difficult though. It's what I call frivolous writing.
Yeah.
It's really you just get in and pull around a little bit, just enough to get attention, and that's about it. The more difficult work comes in the teachers, I don't think I have any in there, teacher's guides that I do with educational films and that type of stuff. That takes a little tighter research and more going into more imagination, but that stuff, a little promotional stuff, doesn't take anything at all, really.
Now, I didn't run into the teacher's
No,
guy.
I don't think I have, I know I don't have any in there.
I see.
It's after you do a film, then you have to tell the teacher how to use it. You have to assume that the teacher doesn't know what to do with it after you make it.
Sure.
You don't have the right kind of shoes on to walk, and to do, you know?
You know, that, yes. I'd love to see one of those.
See if I can dig one up. I don't know if I have any. I don't,
well, I don't want you to go to any trouble.
No, I don't usually.
I just merely say I'd love to see it. Because I noticed that in giving exams. If you just write on the board or hand it out, you haven't helped them very much. And you don't stand there and give the question and explain questions either. But
mm-hmm.
there's a way of giving out, of I can't tell you now, but there's a way of administering exams that's helpful to them.
Yeah, I can see that. It's a matter of putting them in the right frame of mind, in
Partly.
Perspective.
Partly. Yeah.
But what I do with the teachers' things is expand where they can go from the point of the film.
Oh.
Suggest other projects. Give them some other research that went into it that may be just touched upon, that they can expand upon, this type of stuff. That's a little more work.
Yeah.
Do you want to? You're not going to complain to me that you don't have any clean pants to wear home?
Well, that was why I'm there, Dad.
Oh, okay.
There's just an infinite variation of these things, isn't there?
Yeah.
Now, you've got one about the people that build the buildings for Burger King.
Mm-hmm.
And who ever thought you'd have anything like that?
Yeah, that was my bread and butter. That was the basis of my freelancing for a number of years.
Oh, really?
That man put me on a retainer.
Well, he's the one.
Yeah, I quit a couple times. And each time I quit, he'd raise the amount of money he paid me, and he finally put me on a nice retainer.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked real well. But that was an interesting one because I got to meet interesting people. I wasn't always writing about that company.
Mm-hmm.
I was writing about their clients.
Oh, yes.
Burger King's publication got very boring because there was nothing new to write.
Same
it's
thing.
The same employee mess. Over and over again.
Yeah.
You just change names.
Yeah.
But with the First Florida, with the plumb line, there was always, the NOAA thing opened up a whole new world. Learning how these, it's interesting to learn how all these fast food chains work, how
yeah.
they operate,
yes.
how they think.
Yes.
And I enjoy that. I really enjoyed that one. I was getting tired of it by the time I left. But.
Well, now, one of the nice things... that I can think of when you get over here. I don't have any access to the journalism or to WRUF or the radio, Channel 5. And it would be awful interesting to see how some of those programs are put together. Extremely interesting. And why they can't put some of them together here, you see, with all the people they have to draw from.
There's no reason except they're not utilizing their resources because
yeah.
they don't have anyone to direct it
yeah.
at this point.
All sorts of things.
I feel the potential is in Gainesville, as I said, as well as it is in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
We have all the stuff here.
Yeah.
But nobody's doing anything with it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And true, they don't have, they possibly do not have the filming facilities and such. But with grants, they can bring that in from the outside.
Well, for education television, they don't need too much in the way of facilities, do they?
Well, the more sophisticated your facilities, the better production value you're going to get in your... If you've got three cameras to work with instead of one, you get a better presentation. One camera, you only get one dimension. If you have three cameras, you can do what they call cutaways, and you can follow the action in a dramatic sequence or even a documentary type sequence.
Yeah.
I see. Because your equipment's better. It's easier to work with.
Well, even so, you wouldn't have to be show language, would it? Well, anyhow, that's how I don't know a thing about it. On your...
I'd like to take you some time and show you, take you down on the set where they're shooting a movie.
Yeah, I wish you would.
I think you would enjoy it.
I think
could come to Miami. They're shooting a series, and a friend of mine is it's called an assistant director, an AD. And their responsibility is everything that goes on the set. Now, the director directs the actors, and the director of photography determines the camera angles. But all the other people, the people that put the lights up and everything else, they're all under the direction of the AD, or assistant director. And he told me if I wanted to come down to see them, this is a Quinn Martin production, so it's one of the top television producers in the country. And he's got a series going. And maybe we can make arrangements sometime and go down there. I think he'd get a tremendous kick out of watching all these people put things together, and watching them communicate is interesting, because every profession, I guess, has its own jargon.
Yeah.
The film industry is no different.
Yeah. Your script in there, the long one, on the little Indian story. What is it? Run some.
Run Wolf Run.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to change that name, I think.
Yeah, it's all right. It's good. It's all right. I just didn't think it would come to me. Now, you don't have to know too much about Indians.
Well, I did quite a bit of research on this one.
Oh, did you?
Because, and I haven't gotten far enough in the script yet, but I'm incorporating a number of ritual scenes that the little boy... Just for this particular one. I wouldn't normally have to if I were just doing it on the surface.
Sure.
But I want to show some of the old ways that are in conflict in this youngster's life. And I've got some interesting little ritual things. Like there's a pre-hunting scene. Before Indians go hunting or on an important mission, they have a certain little ritual they go through to cleanse themselves.
Sure.
And then I'm working in a little bit. The Cherokee believes that if you're out on a hunt and you run into a rattlesnake, that's a sign of good luck. And the logic is that because the rattlesnake makes you alert, and the more alert you are, the better a hunter you'll be. So I've worked in a scene with that. So I have done a good bit of research on the Cherokee for this particular character, but you don't always have to. I just wanted him to be a real Cherokee. I didn't want him to be just a stereotyped Indian. I wanted him to have some dimension other than just Hollywood Indian. You understand what I mean? And I've been up to Carolinas. I'm very fond of it. And I've been up... There is an Indian village called the Unalaska Indian Village. It's a recreated Cherokee village.
Isn't there a place called Cherokee?
Yeah. The town is very much as I described it, garish, and most of the souvenirs are made in Japan. And the Indian with the headdress that upsets the boy in the beginning, he's there. And I got the idea for it because when we went up to the authentic Cherokee village, our woman guide, afterwards I sat and talked with her for a while, and she started complaining about this old Indian in town. Because, see, Cherokees never wore feather headdresses like that. They were farmers and hunters. They weren't plains savages. And this man's running around with a plains Indian headdress and war paint and all this stuff. And her bitterness about him doing that is what I've incorporated in the little boy. And she is my model for his mother.
Yeah.
So, you know, very, very proud of her heritage. Great deal of pride. And I just sat down and figured, well, if this woman had a child, suppose she didn't have a husband, her husband was dead, and she had a child, how would she raise that child? Well, knowing her pride, she'd probably keep him around the village and fill him with all of the heritage.
Yeah.
But then I had it backfire, because then the child couldn't face reality. He began living in the dream world of the past rather than in the day-to-day world. So that's kind of how I wolf it around.
Right. There's really not much about the little Indian. It's mostly the wolf.
Well, the action there in the chase scene, in the various segments of where they start going through the woods, then he becomes a stronger character. Up until that time, he didn't. I had a lot of trouble with this script, and I'll tell you one of the reasons. Originally, it was a simple story about the boy and the wolf, and that was not commercial enough. And I talked to a couple of producers.
Oh, I see.
It was Disney-type stuff, but they felt it needed a little more dimension, so I introduced another conflict, the artist. And Baxter. Conflict.
You just stuck that in afterwards.
Yeah. I started with just the boy and the Indian. The boy and the wolves.
Yeah.
And there was no other story. That was it. That the man had to get rid of the wolves and the boy ran off with him. And then they said, well, there's no, that'd be a fine Walt Disney thing, but it wouldn't sustain for a whole, it would be a fine half hour show, but it wouldn't sustain for a whole feature. So then I introduced Baxter and Jason. Then I had another problem because both plots were too balanced. And that's no good. So now I have to go back, and one of the rewriting things I'm doing now is pulling the boy out as the stronger, with the other as the subplot.
Oh, you mean you're still working on it?
Oh, yeah. I've got a long way to go on that.
It read pretty good to me. Now let me tell you what I read. I read the
treatment.
What you call the treatment.
The treatment's done. That's how the story's going to go now.
Yeah.
But the script is what I'm working on now.
Oh, I see. The script doesn't follow the treatment.
It follows it in outline, but it takes on a new dimension because your dialogue is put in. And your dialogue is really what carries the story. So I've got to get... It doesn't have to be a predominant love interest, but there's got to be a little bit of love interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to work out that scene with Jason and the girl yet.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to work out the fight scene with the father. I know basically. See, in my mind, I know why Jason is the way he is. But now I've got to make it come out, and I can't tell the audience. I have to show them through dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And the big problem is that the dialogue gets preachy if you try and tell it that way. But I've got to... somehow or other show that his relationship with the Indian boy is an outshoot of what happened to him in Vietnam. The little Vietnamese boy.
Yeah.
So that's the real challenge. Everything has to be carried by action and dialogue.
Yeah.
You don't have an narrator that sits down and says, this is what happened.
You know, it's formidable how many little pieces you've got in that. Takes Houdini to keep them all going, I think.
Well, I think that's what I love about it.
You like that?
I have a mind that works like that.
Sure.
I don't know if you believe in the stars, but I'm a Gemini. And Geminis like to have more than one thing going at the time.
Oh,
we usually end up holding down more than one job or more than one part of a job.
Yeah.
We get bored when we do the same thing straight through.
So You start out with a little interest in the Cherokees.
Well, this one was funny. This one came. I did the script.
And then you had extend it a little bit. You had to put in Baxter and the girl.
Right. It started with the wolf.
And now you're having to get a little more control of it. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, now the characters are taking over.
What you're doing, what happens is what you might call autistic. The autistic problems take over.
But you know what's interesting, and I don't know, in most of the work I've done, it's been reporting, typewriting. I see something, and I commit it to paper. In this, I've read about this happening to other people, but I've never seen it happen until I worked with this script to me. The characters take on a personality of their own. And I'll be sitting working one morning, and all of a sudden the character will be going in an entirely different direction than I thought he should go. But I know I feel it. It's right inside, and he's just gone in that direction. And sometimes I have to go back and change a scene in the beginning because he's done something here that messes up the front. But when you sit and you really work with a character, they become very real. Or it has with this particular project, and this is the first fiction. No, I did one other. I did a short story that I got the Freedom Foundation Medal for. And that character also took over. It was a little old man that I had modeled after two people that I knew, two refugees that had started out in the garment industry and built their own business. And I put the two of them together, and this man became so vivid to me that after a while, I would talk about him like I would talk about someone that I knew rather than a character that I had created. But I knew him, and I knew him well. And I could even physically visualize him. I knew just what he looked like. That was the first time that happened.
I would tell you, you want to get on your way, and you need to. on your, I can see, I can't think much of it at one time. It kind of has to sort of settle in the mind. And one of the first things I thought of this morning when I got up was, now you see, I'm not thinking about you as what good you can do me. Of course, I sort of count on being, you know, having, we stay in touch. But I was just thinking, you need an institution of some sort, business organization. You almost have to have something to work through. You can't cut your connections there. And it looks in a way, now the people you already know, of course, you can work through. But I was thinking about these new people that you've got there. You've got some right potent people over there without waiting too long that you can work through. It'll be.
Excuse me, honey, I don't know where she is here.
It'll be a definite advantage to.
I feel it's something I have to explore.
Sort of close, be along with them. Now,
Eileen is looking for you.
You see, what I see is kind of how they put together odds and ends and give it to the last man there. But you can take care of yourself in that way. That little class, you see, I see that only as a troublemaker. You've got to break in a whole lot of material to use with it. Then you've got a lot of odds and ends, and you've got all the tests to make and give and all like that. Now, I'm not trying to.
No, I know.
Influence, you understand?
I just
see it in that light. And I've had so much of that. I at the time, you see, I never realized just how much it occupied my time and how little actual free time or clear time, how little time, what a small part of my time, my mind was clear. So it's just that. But you've got all those good people over there, and it's certainly be a great advantage in sort of having someone like that to work with, being on a team somewhere, you see.
Well, I feel that for me to do the kind of projects that I like to do, I need that.
Mm-hmm.
The things that come to my mind and grow in my mind that I want to do are the kind of things that need some kind of, I know it's a game, that you need some kind of credentials.
Yeah.
In order to get the people to put the money up to do it.
Yeah.
And as an individual, I don't have those credentials.
But no, that's kind of hard.
I started to tell you about that plantation project that we had. Now, as an individual, it was always hard for me to get any kind of money, grant money or anything else,
yeah,
to put it together.
Yeah, yeah.
But as a project of a university,
yeah,
although I'm the same person,
yeah,
with the same idea,
yeah,
I have credibility.
And with the backing of one or two of the administrators.
That's right. So my credibility vastly improves with, even if it's a small connection, with a link with the university.
Then you have all the office space and the insurance and medical insurance and all those things,
yeah,
that they've already worked out and everything.
I've given very serious thought to that.
And it's very hard for the private concerns to compete with it. Big institutions.
Yeah. Particularly hard for a freelancer. Because I was telling your wife that what it would cost me to buy hospitalization, I think it came to something like $500 a year.
Yeah.
Now, of course, if I had to use it, that $500 a year would be all right.
Yeah.
But $500 every year out of my pocket,
yeah,
into hospitalization is a large chunk of money.
Yes, yes.
So, you don't have that problem when you're working with a large...
You don't even have to keep it in mind. They'll work it out for you and deduct it.
The only thing I was concerned about, and this is going to be up to me, nobody else, is that I want to make this move because I feel I'm ready to grow again and learn. And I just have to be careful that I don't trap myself in a situation where I just continue to do what I've been doing without expanding in some areas. I don't want that to happen. I think it's time for me to reach out, try some new things, sharpen up the things that I've been doing. And the only way I can do that is with an inner relationship with other people. Because I can't teach myself. I've gone as far as I can all by myself. I know that.
Now, you, it doesn't interest you much what John Paul Jones does in the preacher's tour.
I wouldn't mind learning to do feature stories better, but it's not the final direction I want to go into.
Well,
you see, he does with great excellence the very quick article. Should not take you more than a day and a half to do an article. And it brings in some money, and you can make a nice living at it, if you can master it. I know I have several friends who do it. I want to be able to take something I'm really interested in, go into it great length, maybe work on it for several weeks, several months, and I probably won't make any more money for it. But I'll be more satisfied with what I have. It'll be meaningful. It's just a little different kind of writing. I'm not saying he can't do that too, but that's not what he teaches. That
I tell you what, now I'm not acquainted with that kind of writing that he does. I've not seen that. I've just seen the shorter things that he does for the.
Well, that's mostly what he does. He does the same thing for magazines.
We get
John Paul Jones can come up, I've never seen a man like this, but he can come up with anything and figure out two or three articles out of it.
Yeah.
He knows how to slant an article for a particular market, and that's very important.
Yeah.
But I've got a book, for example, by a woman journalism teacher who does the same thing that John Paul Jones does, and she gives you a whole formula for writing an article. The hook, the declaration, the body, the point, and the end, or the climax in the end. And she tells you how to do these. She'll tell you how to take one subject and make five different articles out of it.
Does she do it? Oh, yeah.
And she gives you She gives you examples to do it. But the writing is, it's commercial, but it's shallow.
It's shallow.
If you're interested in something, trying to give an example, she took one article about a woman whose husband died and left her with very little money, but a trailer. He was a construction worker. And this woman moved up to a college town with her daughter, and she went back to school too. And she faced a lot of trials and tribulations. And she did one article that was emotional, just how the woman felt. She took the same facts and did a how-to article telling women how to react to a situation like this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She did a financial article. Same woman, same basic facts, but financially how she made it after her husband died. And there was one other way she did it. And they were all good articles.
Uh-huh. Well, let me tell you, you could help me on that. And furthermore, what I need the most right now is something like that.
Okay.
I mean, I actually need it. And I can tell you why, but you see, I've done these things like I did on JR. And
I read that last night. No, on Mr.
Eastman.
I read Mr. Eastman's material last night. Yeah, I think some of the things I know in that area, I think you would find interesting. Planning and structure. The same thing with the Agri books that I use as a Bible, really.
Yeah.
When I run into trouble with something, I go
back
to it and see what I'm doing there that's wrong. And he uses also good illustrations in creating a dramatic impact.
Yeah.
Whether it's with a factual information or whether it's with fictional information.
Yeah.
That dramatic impact has to be there in order for it to be commercially acceptable.
Yeah. Well, you see, the only thing I've done is just for the actual writer to see. I see Mr. Eastman better than anyone else would see him. But what I have there is just source material.
Well, what I think you have is the flesh. See, I can pick up a textbook that I've worked with and figure out how to put the skeletal structure together, where the head goes, the shoulders, the hips. But it doesn't become interesting until the flesh is put on.
Yeah.
And the flesh comes from what you're doing, which I have to learn to do.
Well, I don't know that you can combine everything. What I was thinking, you see, I don't want to use it any further. That's far as I want to go. And I wouldn't think you'd want to go very far in that direction. It's a whole direction itself. But
well, I would like to get the roundness of character that comes out of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And apply it to my work.
Yes, but you could use my stuff. Or at least get suggestions from it.
Mm-hmm.
And all, because
I could take Mr. Eastman and put him in a fictional situation,
sure.
But I would have a better grasp of him because of what you've done.
That's all I intend. You see, I don't want to do the other.
I do.
Well, it's your business. I mean, you make a living that way.
Yeah, I sure do.
And
but I need to learn to do it. I need to either take what you've got or learn to see as you see.
Now, that'd be a little hard to do. Because you see, all of that is part of my the cogs and that I have worked on all this time. It's partly the statements that I make, and it's the
categories. Well, I could see listening. I could see listening to you. That intent. Well, I'm sure it is intentional. You know something about these people and have a feel for them before you ever trap them up here in this little spider web of yours.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what you want out of them.
Well, you have a lot of choices. I mean, with all the background, you see something will emerge.
I probably couldn't get those people to open up to me like you do.
No, you could never hear that. And that's why I would say that when you talk to the Cherokee people, you see, you don't really get much from them.
No, what I've got most of my Cherokee stuff is history that I've read.
Yes, and the history doesn't have much to say, really. It's all external.
Yeah, no, you don't really get the feel of the people, but you do get the customs, and that's...
Well, now you see, I'm not passing judgment on things.
No,
you're
right.
I'm just going from this one sort of thing where I've got the sources and, you know, transferring it.
Well, I'll tell you where I hit that, and I hit it very hard.
You did right in listening to the Romans before. You not listen to the boy, you listen to her experience. And that's where I, that's what I do. Hello? Are you at home? Where are you? Well, let me tell you, you caught me busy right now, but let me call you back in 2 minutes. All right, if you are, I'll call you in town. I'll take with you in town. That's my right bower, my old right bower. She keeps me percolating. She's my nurse friend. Well,
I hit what you were talking about when someone wanted to do a film and came to me, and I wanted to do the film very badly. And I found out I wasn't capable of doing it. And the reason was he wanted to do a fishing film, but a different kind of fishing film. He wanted to do a fishing film that would feature the fishing guides in all these tournaments. And they are an irascible, rambunctious bunch of men. They are totally unreceptive to a female. And I went down and talked to them several times. I had good introductions. I couldn't get anything from them. They were the... side of themselves that they showed me was not the side that would have made an interesting film.
Yeah.
Now, I sent a man down later, and he got the story.
You got a certain amount. You see, I know when I make contact and when I don't see. And I make contact in a very limited way. Of course, I'm not talking about people who are educated. I'm talking about 90% of the people.
That's what I'm talking about.
And not talking about.
I am luckier than most because being little, I very often bring out maternal instincts or paternal instincts in people, and they show me a certain side of them.
Yeah.
And I can get people talking sometimes.
Yeah.
With the fishing guides, I hit a brick wall.
Yeah.
First of all, there are men whose language is peppered with profanity.
Yeah.
And I totally inhibited them, and I'm able to curse. As they're used to cursing, they couldn't talk.
Yeah.
They really became tongue-tied.
Yeah.
But I think it's an art, and I think that's why so much of it is missed. When writers, good many writers, write about people,
well,
they're not really
it.
Writing about the people,
yeah.
They're just writing about a projection of themselves.
Yes, I don't know what it is either. Now that's what happens, especially these days, what happens in fiction. They don't know, they don't make contact with people either,
mm-hmm.
or they do in a very limited way, so that they tell a story, but see, what I found is that the story is a trap. It lures you away from, see, I don't use stories anymore. I use little points of discovery. I just make it a little discovery. You just see the light a little bit at a time. Well, that won't take you far, you see, and the market for that would be
But in a good script, and not everybody agrees with me, but in a good script, I feel that the story comes from the character. if you write a story and then fit characters into it, it doesn't work. And that was what I was having trouble with.
Yeah.
I had started to do that. Now it has turned around on me. And now the characters are writing the story.
Yeah. So you're at least...
That works better.
You're putting a good deal of work in this, but you're still having a good time.
Oh, I don't think I'd do it if I didn't love it. I mean, why else would anybody in their right mind get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to work if they didn't love it?
Uh-huh. Well, let me tell you, what I need... You see, I've done enough of this stuff like you that I don't need it anymore. I just do a little now and then just as a tonic, so it keeps me alive. I'd do that altogether if I could, but I've done enough, and I think my function now is to make it available, whatever it's worth. And what I need is something that's superficial or external, like the secret story. I see, I've got a half a dozen of them. I can kind of show you what I had in mind. But that's what I need.
Well, let's kind of make
and
a deal, and let me, if I can wade through some of your material, and I'll try and give you what I have of the other.
Well, you see, one thing you could do, you wouldn't have to do it yourself. You could just, if you're there in a position where you can see the people, get someone to do it. Just find someone who does it.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, for these things I do, I don't even want to market for them. I'll just pay for them. I want to market for them, yes. But I mean, I need them that badly. I'd also pay.
I think we can do it both ways.
Pay for
it. I really do. And I still believe that with the material you have, I think we can put some interesting, saleable stuff together.
Yeah.
Even if you use the premise of the bicentennial as an excuse to do it.
Sure.
I still like that. Voices of America bit, and I think Wade liked it too.
Uh-huh.
And there is a possible outlet for it that I hadn't thought of last night, but as I was laying in bed, I was thinking of it. The Florida Bicentennial Commission.
I hadn't thought of that.
Is charged with doing certain preservations of Florida culture and history.
Yes.
And the man at the university is Dr. Sam Proctor. Well, he's a difficult man. I know. I've dealt with him. But I think that I could package some of your stuff in such a way that it would make it extremely attractive as a bicentennial presentation.
It's more interesting than anything he does. That's one reason it would be hard for me to deal with.
I see you know Dr. Proctor very well. You see, what you're doing, true, it's not historical in the pompous sense, but it's living history. It's people as they are.
Yeah.
And I would love to try to sell that. I really would.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't want it, I know another university who's publishing books.
it's fiction almost, but it's all happened.
And what it's going to take with me is to just sit down and listen and listen and pull things, and I probably will be...
I can play one of these things with it, and I'll let you take it, and I can tell you what's in it. That is, line it out for you, and so you won't waste time, and then you can listen to it every day or two for a while.
That's exactly what I'd like to do. And I'd like to get a nice cross-section. Is it Miss Mary?
Yeah.
She's not the black lady.
No.
You have a black lady?
I can't handle black people. That's the most beautiful thing I have. Miss Daisy down the lane.
Okay,
I'd
like to hear that.
Sure.
And Miss Mary, Mr. Eastman.
Now, Mr. Eastman, I can use. I mean, he's willing. And I've got stuff from Cookie that goes back in 1960, spring of 68, and I can use that. I mean, he's sitting for portraits. See, so much of the stuff I've got is private stuff, but...
He may not be able to use it.
No, what I'm trying to tell you is they want to use it.
Well, how about Miss Daisy, for example? That's not usable, you don't feel you got what you wanted out of that one. Is that it?
I don't know anyone that can use it. She's too good. And part of it, her language, she's illiterate, and she has the greatest command of language of anyone I ever worked with.
Well, what I'd like to do is get a whole collection together, but what I'd like to do is make a presentation on what we'd like to do, how we'd like to do it, put some samples in.
Yeah, that's right.
And if we find somebody that says, gee, that's great, we'll publish it. Then we put the thing together. We can always publish it ourselves. That's no big problem. And I'll be honest with you, I think that if it were published, we could sell it. With the right pictures, in the right selection, I think it's sellable. I really do.
Well,
it's a classic kind of thing. It isn't a popular market. It's never going to become a bestseller. But it's the kind of thing that would get talked about, and people would like to hold. People that have some kind of taste would like to say, gee, I'd like to own this.
Yeah.
And I think it's in there, just the little bit I've heard. And I know you've got so much more of it, Wade told me.
Yeah, you didn't even hear Mr. Eastman. You can hear him. You can hear him. He's sitting right there, looking at that stove. Then he turns around and looks up at me. See? And he got that boyish face, young boyish face. And he smiles quick. And right there, you see, talking to me. And what I do when they do that, I get way over there so they talk loud. Because all I have is the outdoor voice. I don't have any telephone voice. And the part of it, the only part I would want to hear would be what I call the talk. He tells the stories about Mr.
There's a bit about the bulls.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful.
Oh, it is. Now, you talk about Zane's Bring a Bull. Let me tell you. That thing is classic. You know what it is? The two of them, you see. He speaks mostly school English, and she stays with this native language. She simply won't speak school English. She's not dumb, you know. She's gifted. She won't do it. And her speech in that is simply beautiful.
Yeah.
And you see, the thing about that is it's sustained. And when you take 8 or 10 pages about the same subject, looking at that bull, it's just unheard of. You see, the speakers don't stay on the subject very long.
Well, there's another reason I think the timing is about right now, too. There's a new book out by Edward Newman, the newscaster, who has joined the ranks of a million other people that say Americans are destroying English.
Yeah.
And I think it's time somebody came out and said that America has a speech of its own.
Yeah.
No reason for us to have to imitate the English. We have a speech that's colorful. Picturesque, very descriptive and emotional.
I tell you, that's one of the first things you want to listen to. Well, I wouldn't put the best things first. I'd work up to them.
Okay.
But that speech, that native language, I don't think the philologists have command of that.
Mm-mm.
Now, the only thing I hear him say is that this language is 18th century English, transposed over here and preserved. Well, what good does that do? I mean, that's no description of a language.
Mm-mm.
And you can't, I don't know how to describe it. They have such fragile tools to describe a language. You've got to hear it.
It's not just in the words either, which is why I keep going back to this bit about I'd like to do tapes, but I'm not quite sure how to do that. It's in inflection. It's in rhythm.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, damn it, that's what I'd like to do my master's on. That's exactly what I'd like to do my master's on.
Well, I don't know. You couldn't. You can't get it down. You got to hear it.
It'd be fun. What a challenge that would be. But then it also is frightening to me. I'm in the field of communications for 20 years now, and I've listened to people talk like you've been listening. And I wonder how much do they understand what they hear a television news announcer say.
Yeah, that's right.
The first experience I had was I did a substitute teaching job one day in a black school in St. Petersburg. And I discovered I couldn't communicate with those kids.
Yeah.
And I talked to the black teachers, and I couldn't communicate with the black teachers. I mean, I might have more than back in Brazil talking Portuguese.
Yeah.
But they had a total different meaning for words that I take for granted.
Yeah.
They use the same word, but...
Yeah.
And so I wonder if we really are a unified country, language-wise.
I've heard people use the term to see that we teach these youngsters out of the slums and use middle-class language and middle-class ideas and all like that. I had no idea what they meant. I never had any idea what they meant until I got into this out here. And it's, let's say that we use middle-class. It's really, it's not so much middle class, it's a school English.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. At least that's what I think of it, is school English.
But it's kind of interesting that you set a standard on that television too.
Yeah.
But I wonder really now how many people that watch this thing really understand what's being said.
That's right.
And if they do, then that proves another thing. That proves that the people who are using the country in English are a lot smarter than the people who are using the school English, because they understand both.
Yeah.
Whereas you take Edward Newman or somebody out of New York and put him in here, and they wouldn't even know what these people are saying.
That occurred to me at one time. Mr. Beaver, Mr. Eastman, you see, are bilingual, really.
Now that would make an interesting feature article.
Yeah.
Just not even what you've discovered in context, but your observations after doing it would make an interesting article.
Yeah.
Our bilingual
relationship. Well, now you see, let me tell you, in my case, I shouldn't have to write that article.
No. But
I'd like to pick your brain. Well, I'd work along with you, see. I can write an article and all like that. But I'm not...
It'd be fun to get the two perspectives, though.
Well, let me tell you, it's not that. But, you see, in order to listen to Mr. Eastman and J.R., I have to be... almost conditioned to be just... channel for there, so that, and if I adapt myself that much, I ought to be spared any more of that adapting. You see, just writing the article is no great thing. The thing of it is, you see,
the experience is what's important, not the writing the article.
Is if you write the article, that means you're geared to your audience. Well, I don't want to have to be geared to Mr. Eastman, and then give to that other audience. It's tedious for me.
That's
I mean,
fair enough.
It stretches me too much.
That's fair enough.
Yes, that's what I mean. It's fair enough.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
Besides, if I let you do everything, I'd have nothing to do, and that wouldn't be fair either, would it?
Well,
I guess I better get my little one.
I didn't plan on doing any of this writing. I've written and written and written. I just stand in there and write. I did that thing on Mr. Eastman, and I just knock it off. Then the next day I clean it up a little bit, but I don't clean
it
up.
I'd like to take that thing with Mr. Eastman, and I'd like to fictionalize it a little bit. And I'd like to try and do a story and capture the feel of it,
yeah.
of that thing. I don't know where it would work, but I'd sure like to do it as an exercise.
I wouldn't play with it. I'd just take it straight forward and read it. But now you know I'm just talking. But now what I need, you see, is something where I can use some of these little things I found out about how to talk
mm-hmm.
and make contact. Where I can use those just on anybody and not have to use these private things. Just use the experience I've got from that.
Mm-hmm.
And then make a little feature story. That's the only way.
Mm-hmm.
Access, I know. I mean, that's
I see what you mean.
Ready. I want to get out of the private business, you see. I only did the private business after I got into it. I couldn't turn it down. It was the most satisfying thing I ever did. Because there, for the moment, you have a feeling that I never had before. You see, when J.R. left here last, he says, you like game meat. We're going hunting now, hunting season. And what he was doing was offering me his choice gift. Well, you see, that doesn't happen very much. It's sort of a passing thing, but as long as it lasts, it's just remarkable. And the thing about the tape is that it preserves it. And you see, the tapes, the ones that are any good at all, are almost sort of like the garden.